From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And mind you, tonight's show is presented by Wright's Coin Shop, and you may call them at 828-298-5402. There's a link for you at speakingofstrange.com. Of course, this is the first Speaking of Strange edition in April of 2015, and you know, every April I have to bring up this strange energy, this strange phenomenon that is the month April. It also happens to be the night before Easter, and later on this hour we'll talk a little bit about that as well, especially since, you know, Easter doesn't always take place on the same day every year. Why is that? Well, we'll get to that. But first off, let's talk about the month of April in general. You know, when I was a very young man, I had a girlfriend for a while named April. And her birthday was in April. And I noticed that around her birthday, it seemed like historic disasters would occur. And once I noticed this, I became curious as to whether or not this could be some kind of a pattern. And I went back looking through history and was pretty astounded by what I found. I don't know if I am the first person to realize this or not, but I've kept up with it since then. And I have a running list here to point out what I mean. Now, when I say bad luck, that's a very subjective term, because what's bad for one person or one culture may be good for another person or another culture. So bearing all that in mind, I'll just give you some examples of what I'm talking about. For one thing, of course, the month of April begins with April Fool's Day, and that's a very odd thing, which I'll tell you a little bit more later about the history of that. It also happens to be tax time here in the United States, which can be a very stressful and frustrating time for a lot of people. But all that said, let's look at just some things that are very significant that occurred. First off, here are some wars that started or ended in April. We'll start with the American Revolutionary War. It started with Paul Revere's ride, and that was April 18th to 19th of 1775. Then we go to the American Civil War. It started in April of 1861 and ended April of 1865. Thus, it is often referred to as the war, quote, across five Aprils, end quote. I should also point out, for those of you listening in Western North Carolina, well, April of 1865 is when the Battle of Asheville occurred, which could have been a big tragedy, because at that point the Confederacy was already decimated when Colonel Isaac Kirby was given orders to come to Asheville with the 101st Ohio Infantry and destroy it. But fortunately, a local militia went out and were able to stave off the invaders and literally save Asheville. We also have other things that happened. The Bosnian War began in April of 1992. The Rwandan genocide began in April of 94. The Armenian genocide began April of 1915. But let's look at some other things throughout history. President Abraham Lincoln was assassinated April 14th of 1865. The 1906 San Francisco earthquake occurred April 18th of 1906. The Titanic sank April 14th and 15th of 1912. The Red Baron killed his 80th victim before being gunned down himself in 1918 in April. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated April 4th of 1968. Apollo 13 the notorious unsuccessful mission to Moon was launched April 11th of 1970. The Chernobyl nuclear accident happened April 26th of 1986. The 1992 Los Angeles riots after the Rodney King verdict erupted April 29th of 1992. The bloody end to the Branch Davidian siege in Waco, Texas happened April 19th of 1993. The Oklahoma City bombing was April 19th of 1995. The Columbine High School massacre in Littleton, Colorado was April 20th of 1999. April 2nd of 2006, 29 people died in Tennessee from tornadoes. Other states suffered deaths as well. In April of 2007, the Virginia Tech massacre happened in Blacksburg, Virginia. April 20th of 2010, the Deepwater Horizon drilling rig exploded, killing 11 people and creating one of the largest environmental disasters in history. April 15th of 2013, the Boston Marathon bombing. April 1st of last year, 2014, there was an 8.2 magnitude Chilean earthquake and tsunami. And weirdly enough, also on April 19th of 2014, you may recall in the news, a suspected meteorite exploded over Murmansk, Russia, and that injured many, many people and blew windows out of buildings. And that's still one of those very weird things that's happened in history. But let's look at individuals. Adolf Hitler was born April 20th of 1889. He also died April 30th of 1945. Saddam Hussein was born April 28th of 1937, and his reign in Iraq ended with the war April 9th of 2003. Anton LaVey, founder of the Church of Satan, was born April 11th of 1930. Interestingly enough, a lot of historians also think that Jesus was actually born in April, probably around April 17th. Obviously, the crucifixion of Jesus is often celebrated right around April, Easter time. It's believed that Buddha was also born April the 8th. In April of 1513, Juan Ponce de Leon was the very first European to set foot into what is now the United States and name Florida. And, of course, a lot of people consider that to have been an omen of doom, considering what the Europeans did to the natives. Something else is very weird is that if you go to the Asheville Mystery Museum, I have an exhibit about something that happened in Asheville on April the 18th. It's called The Story of the Ghoul of the Old Jail. Some kind of a very weird gremlin-like creature appeared in the old jail, swinging around on the bars and terrorizing the prisoners. And that's also documented in my book, Haunted Asheville. The list goes on, and I'm literally just giving you a partial list here. It's also somewhat noteworthy that the official stone of April is the diamond. And, of course, the most famous cursed gemstone in the world is a diamond, the Hope Diamond, which also, by the way, has a connection to Asheville, which we talk about in the Asheville Mystery Museum. And so you can see just by what I've given you, just this partial list, it is quite startling to look at how many things that we all agree upon as either having some bad or weird or at very least historically significant connotation transpired in this month. Now, Sam, have you ever heard that list before?
Of all the random, of all the lists of birthdays and whatnot?
Just everything I read there, you know.
You could do that with any month, though. I mean, to play the skeptic.
But you can't. You can't, though.
What do you mean you can't?
That's what I'm telling you. If you go back and you look at, and I've done this, if you look at all these different months throughout history, you will find that when it comes to these types of things that I have told you about here that would be significant, at least from an American perspective, the Revolutionary War, mm-hmm. the Civil War, mm-hmm. Lincoln being assassinated, Martin Luther King being assassinated, Apollo 13, Chernobyl, Oklahoma City bombing, Columbine High School.
All these very big things, yes.
Yeah, and you just don't find a list of like that, a kind of a who's who of these types of things that at least Americans are very familiar with as national incidents in any other month to the same degree.
Maybe not to the same degree. Maybe it's a little bit more. But, again, playing the skeptic here, because if you have nobody to keep you in check, You're just going to go wild. But I think that, like, if I were to do a cursory web search, I could be like, June, the month of terror. You know, and, like, you know, find some things about June, and you'd be like, well, that's pretty, but, you know. But given a long enough timeline and enough access to information, you can pretty much skew anything to what you want it to be, can you not?
Well, one thing I will tell you is that in the month of April, I don't hold myself up in a cave.
No, you don't.
But I am very, very careful about things that I plan in April, because I have seen, once I became cognizant of this, that it seems there are more risks involved when you plan things, especially things involving a lot of people, you know, orchestrating or coordinating things in April. So maybe, you know, it affects some people more than others. But that said, I'll give you a little bit of insight here before we go to this first break on the name April, just for the sake of knowledge. Romans gave this name. It's from the Latin Aprilis. They say the derivation is uncertain, but it usually, they believe, came from the verb aparir, which means to open, and that would be an allusion to the season when trees and flowers begin to open. That's what they think. And when you look at the history of April Fool's Day, it's actually very mysterious. April Fool's Day, alternatively called All Fool's Day in some places, is not a national holiday, but is widely recognized in various countries as a day for people to play practical jokes and hoaxes. They say in Italy, France, and Belgium, children and adults traditionally tack paper fishes on each other's back as a trick and shout April Fish in their local languages. Now, where did this come from? Well, they say that this fish feature was featured prominently in postcards, certainly in the 19th and 20th century, but they say the earliest recorded association between the 1st of April and foolishness is an ambiguous reference in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, which was published in 1392. But nobody seems to have a clear explanation for where April Fool's comes from. Very weird.
Just to add kindling to the fire, the first girl that I ever had any contact with was a very young man. Her name? April.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is profound.
See, throw that on the list.
We're winning you over, aren't we, Sam? Okay, when we come back, let's get into this little question. Yeah, why does Easter occur on different days every year? And then we're also going to talk a little bit about miracles. And you may or may not have heard that some say just recently the Pope actually produced a miracle. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. We'll be right back here on Speaking of Strange.
Do you think you can tell? Did they get you to train?
Virgil Kane is a man, and I served on the Danville train. Till Stallman's cavalry came and tore up the tracks again. In the winter of 65, we were hungry, just barely alive. By May the 10th, Richmond had fell. It's a time I remember oh so well. Tonight they drove on Dixie down, and the bell.
Thank you.
You know, a lot of people do not realize that this song, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down by the band, was based upon Stoneman's Raid, which was a terrible tragedy in western North Carolina.
Huh.
That's when a lot of, especially women and children in western North Carolina, were left vulnerable because it was at the end of the war, their men were away, and there was this group of men under the command of General George Stoneman who were just sort of allowed to run amok, and they went through western North Carolina looting, pillaging. I'm sure they were assaulting people as well. And, in fact, there is one story in particular that gives you an example of how mean-spirited some of them were. There is a house, I believe, in Marion, North Carolina, called the Carson House, which was one of the more elite estates in that time. And these Union soldiers came in there, and they started just pillaging it and looting it. And before they left, just to make sure that they truly ruined this house, they took barrels of molasses and poured them all over the fine furniture. And there's even a great book that was published a few years ago called Stoneman's Raid, all about that. And so when you hear that song, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, there is a very powerful Asheville connection to that song.
And I guess LaVon Helm was in the band, right?
In the band. I don't remember who the band members were, but
the band, yeah. I think he's old enough to have been there.
Maybe. And, of course, tonight's program is Speaking of Strange. It's the night before Easter. It's brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And before we get into this content related to Easter, let me just also point out that I shot a new video that you can watch at sunshinesimple.com, which is an update. You know, the Sunshine Simple company, which makes the world's most powerful solar generators for the lowest price, guaranteed, has been around for 5 years now. And so I figured it was time to give everybody a good update on where the company is and what we've got coming out. So if you go to sunshinesimple.com, you can watch that video on the homepage. And also we have a sale right now on some of our products. So be sure to do that. You hear us talking about it every week, and go see why we do it and why the people are so excited about this generator. So, you know, this question does pop up. How exactly is Easter Sunday determined? Because, it fluctuates. You'd think it'd be like, well, the first Sunday of every April or the last Sunday of every March, but it kind of shifts around. And the answer to this is essentially the same wherever you go and look, but I figured that I may as well go to Catholic.com to get the Catholic explanation for this, the official line. And here's the question: how is Easter Sunday determined? And the answer is, according to Catholic.com, Jesus rose from the dead on the first Sunday following the feast of Passover. And they say here, technically he may have risen Saturday night, but that still counts as Sunday on the Jewish reckoning, which begins each day at sunset instead of at midnight. Now they go on to say the date of Passover is a complicated thing. Theoretically, the date should be on the 14th of the Jewish month of Nisan, and it should correspond to a full moon, the Jewish calendar being partly lunar. In practice, it didn't always work out that way. The month-moon cycles got out of sync, and sometimes feasts would be held on a liturgical full moon, even when it was not an astronomical full moon. And as a result, rabbis periodically had to announce when the Passover would be celebrated. Well, Christians didn't like being dependent on the pronouncements of rabbis for how to celebrate Christian feasts, so they came up with another way of determining the date. They decided that Easter would be celebrated on the first Sunday after, and never on, the paschal full moon. So they say, theoretically, the paschal full moon is the first full moon occurring on or after the spring equinox. However, this day can be reckoned in different ways. One way is by looking at the sky, which yields the astronomical spring equinox. But since this shifts from year to year, most people follow the calendrical spring equinox, which is reckoned as March 21st. From there, they go on to say, on the Gregorian calendar, the one that we use, Easter is the first Sunday after the Paschal full moon, which is the first full moon on or after March 21st. Easter thus, therefore, always falls between March 22nd and April 25th. And they go on from there.
Oh, my God. Okay. My head's about to explode.
Exactly.
It hurts. Stop.
I could have continued. Isn't that amazing? So now you see that there is a whole ancient system that these theological experts are relying on and, to a certain extent, shifting to their own liking and their own opinions, really, to determine, well, this is when we're going to celebrate it. So you might, if you believe that Jesus rose from the dead on a certain day, and that that day is, you know, tomorrow, for example, well, there's just no way of anybody knowing historically exactly when that happened. So
just
that's how it is with
calendar.
Most
just buy a calendar.
That's all you can do, yes. Easter is when they tell you it is, and that's probably kind of how it's always been.
I'm good with that. How about you, Sam?
Well enough.
Yeah.
Next.
All right, so now let's go on to miracles. Well, you know, first off, the idea of miracles are truly fascinating to me, and that's because, you know, I'm just going to speak in my own language for a moment from my own point of view and say that it seems to me that a miracle in concept represents some moment at which all of the traditional, known, understood laws of physics apparently break down, rearrange, reform, shift, in any case, become inapplicable for a moment as reality does something that is truly out of sync with all of our understanding. You're kind of taking everything that we know about the universe scientifically and just tossing it out the window for a split second and say, hey, something just happened in the matrix here and we can't explain. I find it interesting also that if you really want to look at this from a scientific point of view, you could say that all life is a miracle. I mean, if you look out there among the vast, infinite blackness and cold deadness of space, and you don't see anything like we have here on Earth, and yet here on Earth it's so vibrant and dynamic, it would make you think that, you know, the very fact that we exist here is some kind of a miracle. I've always been interested in some of the opinions that a man named Terence McKenna once gave on this subject.
I love Terence McKenna.
Yeah, he was kind of a psychedelic shaman, and he had really profound insights on the nature of reality, and people kind of questioned some of those because he made no secret of the fact that he ate a lot of mushrooms and other psychedelic
lots
substances.
Lots of hallucinogens.
Yeah, and he said something, though, that was quite wise and succinct. To paraphrase, he said that if you talk to scientists, physicists and cosmologists who say we can take all the little pieces of matter we see out there and sort of back engineer them to this one point at which there was a big bang, the problem is they cannot explain anything past that point. And essentially what they're saying is just give us one free miracle and we can explain it all from there. All right? Give us this one moment where all this stuff just miraculously appeared, and from there we'll take it. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what this thing called a miracle is. We're going to get into a more official sort of definition of it, and I am going to give you some examples of some recent miracles, or what some people claim are recent miracles, and what this means to us and the way that we view the way this world works and what is possible. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual, where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the downright weird, and it's presented to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You'll find a link at speakingofstrange.com, and this show will be back right after this. Scientists can take it from there, explain everything. But boy, that one free miracle is quite a miracle, isn't it? I'm Joshua P. Warren. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. It's the night before Easter. And tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And Wright's Coin Shop is going to be open on Monday. Right, Shelley, right?
Right.
Right, right.
Right, right.
Okay. And so if you want to go visit them on Monday, it's a perfect time to do it. 828-298-5402 is the number, or you can just pop up. 828-298-5402. When we get into talk about miracles, well, you know, it can't help but remind me of the wishing machine. Every time somebody gets on the wishing machine and plugs a wish in there and it comes true, it seems almost like a miracle. And yet, the miracles that we think of usually are things that happen without much planning. It's a split-second manifestation. It happens very simply and organically. It often happens in moments of real stress or drama or disaster as well. But if we go to the almighty Wikipedia and we look up the definition of miracle, it says, simply enough, a miracle is an event not explicable by natural or scientific laws. Goes on to say it may be attributed to a supernatural being, God or gods, a miracle worker, a saint, a religious figure. Theologians say that with divine providence, God and gods regularly work through created nature, yet are free to work without, above, or against it as well. And if we talk specifically about Christianity, considering this is the night before Easter, it says the Gospels record three sorts of miracles performed by Jesus: exorcisms, cures, and natural wonders. In St. John's Gospel, the miracles are referred to as signs, and the emphasis is on God demonstrating his underlying normal activity in remarkable ways. And, of course, in the New Testament, the greatest miracle is the resurrection of Jesus, the central event in Christian faith. It says, Jesus explains in the New Testament that miracles are performed by faith in God. Quote, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, end quote. After Jesus returned to heaven, the book of Acts records the disciples of Jesus praying to God to grant the miracles be done in his name for the purpose of convincing onlookers that he is alive. That's a really interesting concept. It reminds me of the conversation that we had a while back, Sam, when we had Dale Allen Hoffman on here, and we were saying, hey, if we met a guy at a bar who says, I'm Jesus, oh, yeah, is a miracle going to do it? You know, is a miracle going to be enough? Because David Blaine and, you know, David Copperfield and some of those guys, they do some stuff that looks pretty miraculous, huh?
Yeah, I mean, and it was a conundrum of a question.
Yeah. Yeah, and also this particular article makes another good point. They go on to say other passages in the Bible mention false prophets who will be able to perform miracles to deceive, quote, if possible, even the elect of Christ, end quote. And, of course, they go on to talk about how there are false prophets who could draw fire down from the sky and do all these other amazing, remarkable things. So it becomes rather confusing. If you're just relying on miracles to convince you of the power of some other being, well, that might be one of the biggest mistakes you could make. But regardless, I think it's really interesting that we have a tendency to think of miracles as being something profound and deeply moving, such as bringing Lazarus back from the dead, or making the blind see, or healing the lepers, and that kind of thing. And yet, you know, Jesus does simpler things. He turns water into wine, you know, so they can have a better party.
You know, when I was growing up, I don't know how true this was, but, you know, in my household, drinking was bad. And so we were taught that the water into wine, it was actually grape juice. It was not fermented.
Well, you know, I've heard people say that. But the problem is, you go back 2,000 years and try to keep grape juice in the desert without refrigeration and see what happens to it very quickly.
Yeah.
Not exactly the grape juice that you pick up at Ingles. So, yes, let's talk, however, about some of these things that maybe have gotten some attention. Last month, it was in the news all over the place. NBC, ABC, all the big networks were carrying that it appeared that before thousands of people on camera, on a stage, that Pope Francis may have performed a miracle. Now, it says here that he was visiting Naples, there in Italy. And at one point during his time on stage, he was presented with a relic, essentially a glass bottle that contained the blood of a saint. It was a fellow named Saint Gennaro, and he was executed by the Romans in the year 305. So, apparently, the bottle that had this guy's blood in it has contained his blood for 1,710 years. Okay, imagine that. Now, when you have a vial of blood that's that old, it's just congealed or it's at very least like a powder, you know. Well, Pope Francis took it into his hands, and at that point they say it actually liquefied back into liquid blood.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And, in fact, the Pope himself said, well, half of it liquefied, so that means our work is only half done. We still have to do better. You know, that was his very modest way of addressing this. But they say it was very clear. Yeah, I saw video footage of this as well. This it had turned to liquid. People were weeping in the crowd. And they say that the blood there, St. Gennaro's blood, has apparently liquefied in the past on a few occasions. They say that it liquefied in 1848. That was the first time it liquefied in the presence of a pope. It did so in front of Pope Pius. That's according to the Catholic Herald. The blood did not liquefy in front of Pope John Paul II when he visited in 1979, and it did not do so when Pope Benedict visited in 2007. But this pope handles it, and it turns to liquid. So there are skeptics, according to the Huffington Post, who say there is another explanation for the phenomenon. One possibility is that the blood liquefies when there are certain changes in conditions, such as when the relic is moved from storage to display. But that sounds very vague to me, and I don't know. I mean, changes in conditions, well, duh, you know. So I don't know what to make of it. I have not experimented with blood enough, but I will tell you I have seen blood kept as a relic. There, as a matter of fact, right here in Puerto Rico, in San Juan, there is the corpse of a saint on display named Saint Pius. He also was killed by the Romans, and they have a little vial there that has some of his blood in it, and it kind of, to me, looks just like a dark, kind of rusty, reddish, powdery cake in there is sort of what it looks like to me.
I don't remember seeing that.
Yeah, it's easy to miss. It's right next to his head, and everybody, of course, is so wrapped up with looking at his skull, you know, that they a lot of times don't even notice there's that little vial of blood there. And so I think it would be pretty darn weird to pick that thing up and to see it suddenly start, you know, running around as a liquid. So a miracle? I don't know. Who's to say? Who can define that? But when we come back from this break, I do want to share one more story with you. This is my favorite miracle story of all time. I've talked about this on the show before, and I had to watch the news footage of this. Fortunately, it was captured on video. I had to watch the news footage of this to believe it myself. And this may give us some really interesting, deep insight about miracles and about how that anybody may be capable of doing them, and maybe humans in general are becoming more capable of doing them. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. Thank you for spending your Saturday night with us. It's brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop, and we have a lot more coming up for you right after this break here on Speaking of Strange. Thank you. We're in the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. Mind you, next hour of the program, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour, and that means we are deep into Safe Harbor, and that is when we talk about some of the more outrageous and controversial material. It's pretty much the sordid and seedy material we save for late at night, not for the kids, not for the easily offended. So you may or may not want to stick around for that based upon your particular interest and proclivities. But that said, if you don't want to hear it, you know, just tune out for the next hour. Otherwise, that'll be coming up soon. For now, I want to tell you about one of my all-time favorite miracles that I have witnessed. Now, I didn't see this in person, but this was videotaped. It became a news story. And you may remember when this happened because it got a lot of coverage. And people were perplexed and scratching their heads when it occurred, and they're still doing it. I mean, it's just one of those things that seemed impossible, a truly dramatic, magical moment. It was an incident that happened in 2010 in Pueblo, Colorado. A severe thunderstorm hit, packing 60 to 80 mile per hour winds. And this storm dumped more than 3 inches of rain in less than 2 hours and caused major flooding. So in the town, at the intersection of 29th Street and I-25, there was a woman named Charlene DeHara driving home from her job at Wendy's in her SUV, and she got caught in the middle of a flash flood. Now, this is during broad daylight. And this woman cannot swim. So somebody had a video camera, and they started videotaping her as men were trying to, you know, work their way out there to figure out if they could rescue this woman. Because here you see her sitting there in her SUV. All four windows are rolled up. The water's getting higher, and the SUV starts to sink. And as you watch the footage of this, your stomach kind of starts to sink because you see this woman in there, and you imagine what she must be thinking and feeling, and you see the odds do not look good here. Something really awful is about to happen. So as she sinks, and of course, if you've ever been in a flood, the water that's rushing through, it's full of logs and debris, and I mean, it really takes some brave, courageous people to wade out into that and to try to save somebody. It's extremely dangerous. So you see on the video these four men who go up to the SUV as it's sinking, sinking, sinking. And there's one guy who's just banging and beating as hard as he can on the glass of the car, and it just won't budge. And finally, this SUV is completely submerged, okay? It goes under the surface. You cannot see it anymore. And you know this woman is doomed. She's going to die in this thing. And at that point, something absolutely astounding happens. One of the men there, named Howard Absetz, an unemployed store manager, reaches down under that water, and it appears as if his hand goes through the windshield of the car from the perspective that you see. And all of a sudden, he pulls and strains, and he lifts this woman up out of the water. And people are astounded, and they're cheering, and they're just, you know, ecstatic that he has pulled her out. He claims that from his point of view, he's just down there reaching around for anything he can do, and suddenly, he said, he felt her hair, and he felt her back, and he pulled her out. But the story doesn't end there, because finally, when the flood was ended and the SUV was towed from the water, all the windows were still up and tightly intact. There was not a single crack or break anywhere. They say it seems impossible that one of those windows could have come down at that moment for him to pull her through it and then have gone back up on its own. It almost seemed like that this man was able to dematerialize that windshield at that moment of crisis and move his hand through it and achieve the impossible and rescue this woman? And is it possible that every single one of us have that potential within us? That is what a miracle is, and maybe we humans can get better at producing and performing these things and learning how flexible reality is. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. We'll be right back.
Yeah.